Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Blog Talk Radio. My name is Jim Burns, and it's Tuesday night, April 23rd, 2013, and I come to you from the friendly confines of my warm and cozy home here in Bricktown, New Jersey. I don't know about you, but the weather's just been too chilly for me. I still have my heat on, and it's just chilly as can be outside, but it's warm in here, and we're going to be talking to you tonight about a few topics that are related to bullying. One of the topics is up on my website right now at www.bullyproofclassroom.com, and I think it's the lead story there right now, and it's called Playground Politics. And if you'd like to weigh in on the discussion, please call 646-595-4965. Again, that number, 646-595-4965. We are a show that welcomes all opinions, all thoughts on any topics that we speak about. Our shows have we have not been getting listeners strictly because I don't market enough. But our downloads are unbelievable. And we just did a show yesterday, which was the anti-bullying tip of the week. And I tell you, we've already got several hundred downloads on it. We are now on iTunes, which, as you know, you can get that right through your phone. So you can hear the all of the episodes of the Bullyproof Classroom right there on iTunes. Again, we are at 646-595-4965. I welcome your calls. The story that we're speaking about tonight, I actually heard this story. I was coming back from Virginia, and I can't get any radio. And on my regular radio in the car, and I had the had my phone, and I do have radio.com there, and I can get different stations. And it was spoken about, trying to think, it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, but it was about a school district in New Hampshire. It was the Wyndham Schools in New Hampshire. And they cited dodgeball as a game that used human targets and claimed that it may have been contributing to a bullying problem. Now, I'm just going to read a line or two here for you so you can get a feel for what I'm going to be speaking about. Students attending Wyndham Schools in New Hampshire won't be dodging balls during gym class anymore. The school district voted to ban dodgeball and other human target sports in a recent 4-1 decision, according to multiple sources. The superintendent, whose name is Henry LeBlanche, says, "We spend a lot of time making sure our kids are violence-free. Here we have games where we use children as targets. That seems to be counter to what we're trying to accomplish with our anti-bullying campaign." He claims we spend a lot of time trying to deal with the safety of our children, and we do want to take all the steps that are necessary. Now, my thoughts on this. I think we really have to take a look at what's really happening. And how we have to help our kids develop greater resiliency and really to learn how to compete and develop stronger pro-social skills. And it's through something that I call playground politics. And just think about kids who are 6, 7 years old, 5 years old. They're on the playground. They're dealing with each other all the time. They're dealing with one another. And you do have some adult supervision. You may have, and that can be limited based on the amount of staff that people have out on the playground. And they monitor how the kids play. And I truly wonder, now I know bullying occurs in unsupervised areas, and I know that kids, you know, are going to have conflict and other things that are just related to getting along. And their adults have to step in and so on and try to make sure that they're not, you know, getting too frisky, or they're going to hurt each other, or maybe have a fight, or say mean things to one another, and all of that. And that all has to be taught. Kids need to be taught how to get along at a young age. The problem is some adults don't know how to get along, and then what they do is they use those skills to try and teach kids how to get along. And I could always remember as a young kid, on any day during the summer, I would leave with a ball and a bat and a glove, and man, I'd play baseball till the sun went down. And we had no supervision. Just a group of guys got together to play. And we always had a dollar or two in our pocket, you know, and maybe we'd go over to a hot dog wagon and get a hot dog and a soda. We welcomed other kids that wanted to play. We took breaks because it was in the hot sun. We worked on our skills and different things. And we just overall had a great time. Now, the question is, did we all get along? Well, of course not. And believe it or not, there were bullies amongst us. And we experienced that at certain times, some of the intimidation and the fear because of these kids that were bullies. Okay, we really did, but everyone stayed and played, and we solved our own problems. We worked on getting along and discovered what I call a healthy pecking order on the field. And some of the lessons that we learned really did last a lifetime. We all knew how to play the game of playground politics. Now, I am not a proponent of bullying, nor do I believe that it's some sort of rite of passage. But I do believe that bullying's on the rise, in part, because of the inability of our kids today to develop greater emotional resiliency and to solve interpersonal problems on their own. One of the goals of any anti-bullying program should be to strengthen the victim and provide them with pro-social skills that are necessary to function in an adult world. See, now, this superintendent of schools in New Hampshire, he wants to be sure that kids are violence-free. I don't think any kids are going to be violence-free. I really don't. And I think that maybe we should work on some of the displaced anger that parents have. You know, parents who are angry, who are dysfunctional in their own way, okay, need to really understand that dysfunction and their inability to get along with other adults, they displace that on their own kids. And the kids bring that into school. And we have to get a better understanding that competition is healthy, and kids need to learn how to compete in that healthy way. We learn from competition. Now, you want to ban dodgeball. Now, is dodgeball the only sport that is exclusive and potentially violent? Well, why don't we ban football, hockey, lacrosse? I mean, even soccer can have some type of body contact. Sports do involve exclusion. That's all there is to it. There's no way around it. You strike out, you're out. You can get taken out of a game because either your skills are poor or you just are not doing well on that day. There are things that kids participate in, and we're going to share them, that are exclusive. And sports, to a degree, do have a lot of body contact. They do involve some emotion. And above all, they are competitive. And we can't have kids shying away from competition because they're going to have to compete in this world. So let's take a look at what kids can learn by properly playing the game of playground politics and how it can benefit them as they move forward into adult life. Now, understand a couple, you're going to have to understand a couple of things here. First one is, life is not win-win. Win-win is a beautiful thing. But you tell me if people are involved, I mean, even in a family, even in a marriage, if there's actually win-win at any time, it means you win and I win. I don't think that exists, strictly because of the fact that even if I compromise to make life a little bit easier and you compromise, I still sacrificed half of what I believed in or a portion of what I believed in. And that's the way it actually is. My daughter Grace was involved, and she's still involved with a traveling soccer team. And several years ago, at the conclusion of the season, she and some of the other kids got together and they received a trophy. You know, everybody gets together. They had a little end of the season party, you know, and she got a trophy. Now, Grace never missed practice, went to all the games. She talked to the coach. She talked to her teammates. She was good at what she did. As a matter of fact, she was the MVP of the team, and she received a special trophy because of that accomplishment. Now, this is a kid that's about, at the time, 10 or 11 years old. And on the way home in the car, Grace said to me, "Dad, you know, about half of the team missed practices. They didn't go to games and really never gave their best effort when they played for the girls." I think she cited four or five girls. And then here was the question that left my mouth hanging open. How do they deserve a trophy? How do they deserve a trophy? Well, how do they deserve a trophy? I mean, I know it's nice. I really do. I think it's wonderful that, you know, you want to hand out trophies to kids, but the wrong message gets sent here. You know, and if everybody won, okay, if everybody won, and believe me, everyone's not a winner. If that truly were the case, we'd have two Super Bowl champs. We wouldn't need a World Series. And we wouldn't even need political elections. The game of playground politics needs to reinforce the fact that there are those that are bigger, better, smarter, stronger, and kids need to learn how to recognize those skills in other kids. And they have to understand that they may not be on the same level playing ground as everybody else. I went to, I was in grammar school. I was in high school. Yeah, I didn't have some of the same academic skills as some of the other kids. The ground wasn't level. That's all there was to it. Some kids are just smarter, bigger, stronger, and have greater skill academically and in terms of sports. I had the kids that were better at what they did in terms of baseball, basketball, or whatever the case might be, okay, I learned how to respect those greater skills in my teammates. I got my good feelings because I practiced and put forth my best effort. Did we always win? No, we lost a lot. I can remember the movie Moneyball, which I probably could watch every night if I was given the chance to, where Billy Beane, who was the general manager of the Oakland Athletics, put a baseball team together that in 2002 won 20 consecutive games. They went on to the playoffs, and they lost in the first round. Now, his heart and soul was into constructing a team on a shoestring budget, and he did. But in the final analysis, he's still trying to win the last game of the season, which would make the Oakland Athletics the World Series champions. Everybody doesn't win. There are winners, there are losers. And losers have to accept loss as just a part of life. Just a part of life. Are you seeing the picture? See, kids go to school. They compete academically, and they may compete in a sport. They could compete in anything. And they have to learn at an early age that it's okay to lose. Every kid, every body, every person doesn't win. You go on a job interview, and you don't get the job, you lost. Somebody else got it. You tip your hat to the person, and away you go, and you go on to the next thing. We don't realize what we're teaching our kids when we level the ground and recognize them all for the same thing. As a matter of fact, my daughter said to me, she said, "Dad, there should be three trophies. Most valuable player, most improved in sportsmanship. Those are the three trophies they should give out." And you know what? I got to agree with her. Competition is good at any age. See, we want to withhold that from little kids because we don't want them to feel bad. And as adults, we compete all the time for promotion, academic recognition, and really, at times, status. You know, it's like we're always trying to keep, like that line, keep up with the Joneses. Somebody always wants something a little bigger and better, and somebody else gets it, and then you want to have the same thing. It's something that is just part of life. It's part of adult life for sure. Kids need to know how to compete in the real world as soon as they enter the game of playground politics. See, we're trying to eliminate games like dodgeball, tag, and I know there was one school district that wanted to eliminate spelling bees because that promotes exclusion. And it does. It does. Think about that for a minute. All these kids in an auditorium, and they have to spell certain words, and they spell a word wrong, they're out. They're out. Okay? And that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes. Problem comes in is we're even eliminating spelling bees. from schools because we don't want kids to feel bad. And believe it or not, some of our kids are beginning to feel good about themselves for no apparent reason. They're starting to develop an entitlement mentality and believe that the world revolves around them. And they absolutely don't have a clear understanding about their own limitations. Now, I can attest to the fact that we want kids to believe that they can do anything. I understand that. Matter of fact, one of the lines years ago was, you can be anybody or do anything that you want to. You can become anything you want. Well, you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I wanted to be a professional baseball player. Badly. Unfortunately, I'm sitting here in my living room doing Block Talk Radio, talking to you guys, and I certainly am not a professional baseball player. Did I want to be one? You bet. Was I one? No, I wasn't. Kids who don't understand the concept of competition begin to see it as a threat to who they are. And they don't participate in competitive games or competitive activities for fear of losing. See, it's okay to compete and lose. You competed. It's okay. You were not picked. You were cut from the team. I was cut from teams myself. There was a school district a few years back in northern New Jersey, and it faced a pretty big dilemma. Six students had a grade point average that were so close in number, meaning they had to carry this thing out to I don't know how many places, that they couldn't decide who the valedictorian of the school was going to be. Now, this, unless I missed something, the simple use of a calculator would have been very helpful in making that determination. But because the district feared parental complaints and lawsuits, all six students were named valedictorian. Explain that to me. One valedictorian, one salutatorian. How could you have six valedictorians in a school? They all didn't have the same grade point average. Carry the numbers out to the last decimal point. And at the very end, if somebody's a two and you're a one, I win. The parents and the kids were so fearful that they were going to lose. And they believed that we all should win. And they were up in arms because the district, you know, was going to award one valedictorian award to a student, that they gave it to six kids. I don't know who it's unfair to. Probably unfair to all six of them. At that point, I believe that if everybody wins, nobody wins. And that's what happened in this case. Now, get out on the playground, start running around. You start to see the abilities that some of the kids have. Little kids, some of them are better on the jungle gym. Some of them are pretty good on swings. Some can throw a ball further. Some are better at dribbling a ball. Some can hit a wiffle ball further. Some play kickball better. There's all kinds of abilities that are on that field. And some of them are very natural. They're very natural abilities. And the interesting thing is that kids have to grow and begin to take a look at and respect someone else's abilities. You know, I often wanted to look like Brad Pitt or George Clooney or one of these other leading men, or I'd watch bodybuilding competition on TV and I'd, you know, say, oh man, these guys look terrific. I wonder how I could get to that point. Looks are genetic. Sometimes athletic ability is genetic. Some people get it. Some don't. And you have to respect the ability that other people have. You know, kids know on the playground that if the kid that was it in the game of tag was the fastest running kid in the school, that he wasn't going to be it for very long. His speed was respected. If we were playing baseball, the last thing we want to see was the best hitter coming up to bat on the baseball team with the bases loaded. Why? The kid that's it is the fastest kid in the school. The kid that could hit had the most ability in terms of hitting, and now he's got a chance to win. We didn't want to see these people. We didn't want them around. You know why? Because they were going to win the game, and they would never be it. They'd always catch us, and usually they'd catch me because I wasn't a fast runner. Kids need to learn how to respect and at times admire those with greater abilities than them. And I don't mean, admire, to feel bad about someone else having greater ability than you, but just to recognize it as something that's unique to them. Kids need to know this and work on this. The adults are, very tough on them. They're very tough, too. See, they don't get enough of it in the home. Envy or whatever, for a job promotion or bigger house or whatever the case, and kids are never taught, hey, he's really good. He's a good ball player. I wonder what he does different than what we do. I'm not trying to make a kid feel bad. I'm trying to make him understand that everyone has different skill levels and different academic levels. Kids can become fearful and at times angry when they enter into competition with someone who has greater athletic or academic skills than they have. And once you have this, the schools then eliminate competition because they don't want to affect the self-esteem of the child. Well, what is self-esteem anyway? What is self-esteem? I don't even see it as self-esteem. I see it as self-acceptance. I have to accept who I am, where I am, where I've come from, my parents, my brothers and sisters, my lot in life. Those are things that I have to accept and learn internally how to feel good about who I am, where I come from, and what I'm about. And when we believe that everybody's going to feel bad because of the fact that they, don't have the same abilities, it does nothing more than to prepare a kid for a life of jealousy and envy as they grow older, and they're only going to wish that they were someone else. Kids have to learn how to be happy with who they are. They have to learn to be content in their own skin moving forward into adult life. Your parents aren't going to change. My parents aren't going to change. And most of the time, kids will grow up in life, and that's the first thing that they'll want to change. They see somebody else's parents when they go visit homes and so on, and they want to have different parents. Or they get upset with their brother or their sister. Or they don't like the town that they live in. And they become a group of complainers who believe that they got dealt a bad hand growing up in life. Then all of a sudden they don't get a job that they wanted. And what happens is, okay, they start to develop the same attitude that they of envy and jealousy, stuff that could have been conquered on the playground when they were younger. The social and emotional window for a kid's brain is 5 years old. I've shared this 1,000 times. And whatever thoughts and conclusions that a kid has drawn about himself or herself, it's usually locked up by the age of 5 in the brain, and the window closes. And that once that window closes, what's on the inside becomes like a greenhouse. And those little seeds that were planted start to grow every day, and soon they become a redwood tree when that child becomes an adult. And if the stuff troubles him or her bad enough, what will happen is that's when you got to get a therapist to come in, break the glass, reach in, and help this person rearrange those thoughts or maybe draw different conclusions about who they are. Kids who were really learning how to handle the playground and can play playground politics, they learn how to make friends a whole lot easier. And kids want and need friends, but sometimes knowing how to pick a friend can be troublesome for some. Sometimes kids will pick a friend because the kid who they see as a potential friend is a bully, and they don't want to get picked on by him, so they pick a kid who is picking on others. He may have even picked on him. And sometimes we see this, you know, as, you know, just like good fun, telling jokes. But it's not all fun if both parties aren't laughing. Games like basketball and football and other sports can give kids a sense of team play. And I'm not talking here about sports that kids play in an organized way as part of a traveling soccer team or ball team or whatever. I'm talking about the things that they do on the playground every single day. And we have reduced recess time dramatically in our public schools in this country. And I'll share why later on. I was working in a school a few years back, and the kids ate lunch and they had time to go out on the playground. These were eighth grade boys, and they stood around. They were standing around on the playground. So I figured, you know, I'm going to go in. I was there as a consultant. I figured I'm going to go in, get a few basketballs, give them to the guys, let them play. I brought the basketballs out. I handed them to the kids. They started throwing the balls at one another. They didn't have a sense of how to organize themselves in order to play a game. They didn't shoot the ball. They threw the ball all over the lot. They had no idea how to pick teams for a 5-on-5 game. And, you know, when you can put together a pickup game, it can really help kids make friends and develop greater friendships with kids with similar abilities who can play and compete with them on a reasonable level. And they'll learn how to offer encouragement to one another, which is what it's really all about, because lots of times compliments that kids get are far better received from their peers as opposed to adults. And I really hate to say it, but I think once parents and coaches get involved in organizing kids, sometimes the sense of fun and friendship seems to be taken out of the sport, and the kids suffer. The kids suffer. Hear this now, from the frustration and anxiety, and often the tension of competition. That's not what it's about. Competition is healthy. We're not supposed to feel frustrated and anxious, but that frustration and anxiety gets imposed upon them by a coach because he's yelling and screaming at them for making the wrong play, making the wrong pass. And we just saw it at Rutgers. I wonder how much tension and stress those kids were under with their coach, Mike Rice, kicking them, throwing the ball at them, grabbing them, and pushing them during practice. That team, a college team, is taught to compete. But what happens? How fearful am I at 19 or 20 years old if I believe when I get over to the sidelines, I'm going to be berated, called names, grabbed, pushed, shoved, okay, and made to feel like I absolutely am the lowest thing on the food chain because I made a wrong pass. That is not what competition is about. It's about camaraderie, encouragement, and a group of people developing ability and a love for the sport that they're playing. That's what it's about. That's what should be taught on the playground. Kids don't know this. And that's why it's up to us to develop, maybe even develop some of these thoughts in ourselves, who we are. The playground teaches a balance, and it also teaches academic consistency. Now, I don't know about where you live, but in my state, in New Jersey, we have to pass a standardized test. The kids do. That determines their placement for the next school year. Not to mention the fact that they get state funding. You know, if all kids do well. And the teachers, the schools have basically trained the teachers that they have to teach to the test, which means from September until who knows when, March in the spring, okay, They basically just drill and kill on this test so that these kids are going to have the requisite academic skills. All fall, all winter, they're just absolutely hammered. This test is just hammered into them. And less time gets spent moving around and more time gets spent in a seat. There is absolutely no balance in academics and in the idea that I can move. You see, if I am constantly in my seat, and I mean, when I was a kid, go to school, teacher would say to us, look, let's get this work done, and if we're done with all our work by 2 o'clock and we go home at 2:45, we'll go outside and we'll play softball in the springtime, maybe we'll play a little football, something like that. Today, when kids finish their work, what happens is, what they have to look forward to is more work. The kids get out of balance and suffer from what I call a scarcity mentality. And what this means is that there is the time for movement is scarce, so the students have to figure out a way to steal it during class time. That's why kids are out of their seat. That's why kids are talking when they shouldn't be talking. They're moving around. They get nailed, and they get accused of cutting up, you know, and so on. Kids need a certain amount of movement during the day. And I'm not a big proponent, you know, of cooperative learning and all these other things that schools have now where everybody sits in little pods, you know, where they're supposed to be there. But it's like you're sitting next to each other, and I'm not supposed to talk to you, you know, and so on. What I am told, it's like saying, no talking, no moving. Well, the minute I hear no talking, no moving, what happens is the first thing that comes into my mind is, how am I going to steal this now? Because I can't do it with permission. Students develop greater academic consistency and success by giving the time to be involved in what I call free play. Doesn't mean you just throw them outside. It means you give them an opportunity, even as a teacher. Go outside, you become the official pitcher in a softball game or the official quarterback. If you can. And let the kids have time. They'll learn more outside playing than they're going to learn in that classroom. Now, I've given you some stuff that I think is rather important. And I think right now I'm going to share the most important piece with you. And I think we have to understand it real well. And that's this word that I'm going to share with you is called coaching. Coaching. Coaching is not just about sports. We all have to understand that. It's not just about sports. It's about life. See, we are adults. I am 58 years old. I am an adult. If my daughter comes to me and asks me a question about who she's getting along with, who she's not getting along with, what do I do if I like a boy, what sport should I go out for, what courses should I take in high school, or while I'm in high school, should I try to take tougher courses because I want to be in a position so that I can get into a college when I graduate. How do I talk to a teacher in high school so that I can make them understand that I really care about the subject? Questions that kids ask and have on their mind, we have to have the ability to answer. All the way up to things like, how do I deal with relationships even as I grow older? Who do I pick as a life partner? Or at least give me some direction as to who would be good for me in life, rather than allowing me to try and figure it out on my own. And these are all things that should be discussed with kids when they're young, when they're very young. How to cooperate even though you disagree. How to disagree with the right attitude. How to say please and thank you. What does respect mean? Respect means you have a high regard for the rights and privileges of another person. What is responsibility? The ability to follow through on things and tasks. The ability to get things done. The ability to start something and then finish it. That's part of responsibility. What does the word maturity mean? Maturity, there's two definitions that I have. One, it is the ability to cooperate even though I might disagree. Sounds simple, doesn't it? There are plenty of people who are on a job today. If they disagree with their boss, they don't want to do what their boss says. And there are plenty of children in school today. If they disagree with the teacher, they don't want to do what the teacher says. Somebody's in charge. Somebody is a CEO. Somebody is middle management. Somebody is a supervisor. Somebody's the principal. Somebody's the vice principal. Somebody is the boss. The kids need to learn how to listen to the boss, but understand that they may have to cooperate sometimes when they disagree. And also, when they want to disagree, they can do it with the right attitude. Second definition of maturity is the ability to subordinate an impulse to a value. Think about that. You have an impulse. You have to measure what you want to do and see if it lines up with your belief system. Kids don't know this. Kids function off of impulse. They have to be taught how to develop a value system so that they can go forward in life and make the correct decisions. This is all part of coaching. And if we want our kids to develop pro-social skills, we've got to coach them through what I call the game of life. Because ultimately, they're going to have to do things in my absence. My children are going to have to do things in my absence, not in my presence. How do you measure your success as a parent? When you look at your children, what skills will your children have that you can look at them and say, I was rather successful? You may not even see some of those abilities in your kids, but you will see them in your grandchildren when you watch your kids raise their kids. And you'll know if what you taught them was enough. And if they had the ability to develop all of the above that I just spoke about, what parents do in moderation, children will do in excess. And parents at times can talk about the teacher in the home, complain about their job, talk about neighbors, spread rumors, gossip, and so on. And above all, parents are real good at complaining. Complain about everything. And kids then begin to believe that there's something wrong with everybody else and there's nothing wrong with me. We have to teach our kids how to be graceful losers. We have to teach our kids how to develop friendship skills. We have to help them compete in a respectful and responsible manner. And we have to help them solve interpersonal problems with one another where there's enough space allowed in a disagreement for a productive conflict. Are you getting it now? Kids have to be left alone to play and to learn the game. And yes, teachers, administrators, supervisors, playground aides, and everything else have to be there to guide them. But we have to have the ability to help them understand right and wrong. We have to have the ability to help them understand how to get along. And if we're not getting along, and if we get placed in a position of mediation between two students, and we think one student is right and one student is wrong, which can happen, there's no question about it. One can be right and one can be wrong. We have to have the ability to communicate to the person that's wrong why they're wrong, and we have to make sure that we give them the opportunity to apologize for any behaviors that they exhibited toward one another. And we have to encourage good pro-social and friendship skills. And some of this stuff is not going to happen overnight. See, some of the problems with bullying that we have right now, some of the difficulty that we have with bullying right now is a direct result of kids not understanding this game that I call playground politics. See, and the bullying epidemic, which we do face, is a direct result of exclusion. I'm not going to have the ability. I'm not going to have the I don't mean exclusion like leaving someone out. I mean, too many things have been excluded from our schools that help kids and teach kids how to get along and develop the necessary confidence and resiliency to face their fears and understand how to function as part of a class, a group, or maybe even a team. That's what we want to take a look at. That's what we want to do. See, it's beyond dodgeball. You know, that was cited at the beginning of the article. The Wyndham School District was just reacting possibly to one parental complaint. And believe me, I have seen that. I worked in a district one time where kids weren't allowed to wear hats. And it said no hats are in the policy. It said hats were not allowed to be worn in the classroom. And one parent got a hold of the policy and said, well, it says here you can't wear them in the classroom, but that doesn't mean you can't wear them in the hallway. And what happened? You guessed it. Everyone had a hat on in the hallway. They had to take it off when they went into the classroom. One parental complaint can change an entire policy in a school. But we're not here. Schools are not designed to deal with one parental complaint and change everything around to meet the needs of one parent, because it is obvious to me that you can't please everybody all the time. You just can't. Everyone can't be pleased all the time. Somebody's going to be unhappy. And some people have to learn that, you know, things are not always going to go their way. And it goes right back to the statement that I made earlier, if everybody wins, nobody wins. See, the Wyndham School, they were just reacting to one parent. I'm sure of it. And dodgeball is not the reason for the bullying. Dodgeball is not contributing to the bullying. Dodgeball just gives kids who are bullies, you know, the venue to act out. That's all. It gives them the venue to act out. And what we have to learn how to do is discipline the bully and strengthen the victim. That's the biggest thing that we have to do. Discipline the bully and strengthen the victim. Victims need resiliency. Victims need to develop confidence. No one develops confidence if they're not coached on how to do something. And then once they start to really, you know, develop a skill in terms of either a relationship or academically or in terms of a sport or whatever, we slowly let them start to do things on their own. I mean, you know, you don't throw a kid into a lake that can't swim. What you do is you bring them out there and you hold them and you let them float a little bit and you stand alongside of them and you work with them. You don't give a two-year-old a bat and a ball and tell him to go out and play and see how well you do with your friend. They won't know what to do. You don't give them basketballs when they're two or three and say, go ahead and play on your own, you'll be fine. They don't know. So, therefore, we shouldn't expect kids who are 2, 3, 4, and 5 years old to understand the win-win mentality. It doesn't exist. They need to understand win-lose. They need to be taught that. They need to be graceful losers. I honestly believe, growing up as into an adult, over a period of time, okay, adults who become parents and so on don't understand this stuff themselves. They don't. And they would just assume run on the field, when the ref gets the call wrong. They just assume, yell at the coach. You know, I mean, let me tell you, my daughter has got a soccer coach. Do I agree with everything that he does? Of course not. All I can tell you is this. I'm not out there coaching. He is. I'll give him credit for doing that. And if my daughter complains about the coach, I'll say he's the coach. Years ago, there was a line that was used about me. It was said that the principal isn't always right, but the principal is always the principal. And that's true. And if I'm in the position where I have to make a decision, I make it, and everyone else has to live with it. It's win-lose. My decision was the one that I decided to make, whether or not I had 30 other people who didn't like it. Adults today have to learn how to coach their kids through this game. Adults today have to be the ones that are there. We have to allow kids to make mistakes. We have to allow kids to compete. We have to allow them to fall if, in fact, they're going to fall. We have to help them recognize and respect the skills, ability, and even the appearance of others. We have to teach our kids how to communicate, and we have to allow them to settle sometimes differences on their own as they grow older. Once we get involved and we bring our own agenda to the table between two kids where we want to eliminate spelling bees and we complain that I didn't get a trophy and so on, we are teaching our kids nothing more that they are entitled and they can get anything that they want to get. So, in closing, teach your kids the game of playground politics. Sometimes you got to leave them alone. Sometimes you got to get involved. Know what you're going to teach them. Help them respect the abilities of others. Help them understand that they're going to lose. Help them settle conflict. And teach them how to disagree with the right attitude. And just allow them to grow, mature, and become strong adults. And I think at that point, what we're really going to start to see a change in some of the intergenerational tendencies that we now see, where some pretty bad behavior is passed down from parents to children. My name is Jim Burns. You have been in the Bullyproof Classroom. Please go to bullyproofclassroom.com. Take a look around. You'll find some things there that you're probably going to be able to use. Remember, this show will be on iTunes, probably within the next 15 minutes. Enjoy your evening. I think the Mets are on tonight. So, hey, take a look at a ball game. I know the Knicks are on. They're playing. They're in the playoffs. You know, enjoy all that you have. And we're going to see you next week. On the 29th, we have a very special interview coming up with a gal named Josie Milner, who's doing her best to help stop bullying. She's 17 years old, and she is a musician, and I look forward to speaking with her. You guys have a great night.